What if you were able to sit down for lunch with some of the greatest leaders in the world? What would you ask? What would they say? Welcome to the Lynch with a Leader podcast, where you're invited to join us in learning the spiritual principles behind big success. Here's your host, Mike Lynch.
You know, I think many times the secret to sticking in there is the ability to innovate, the ability to create, and the ability to elevate. And we're going to talk about all of those things in this episode of Lynch with a Leader. If I've never met you before, my name is Mike Lynch, and it is my honor to be on this leadership journey with you as we're all seeking to be the leaders that we were created to be in the spaces and places that God has put us. Well, welcome to episode 206. Today's going to be a good one. Today, you get to hear somebody with some fire in their belly, and that is Natalie Bourne. We're going to be walking through her newest book, Set It On Fire, looking back at her journey into life and leadership and the principles behind her book. Natalie is just contagious energy, and you are going to love it so much. And I tell you what, man, Natalie's book will be such a great resource for so many of you, even with young college students around your home, people in their early 20s, early 30s that are wanting to figure out their abilities and what they can do. This book will be so good. Man, today is going to be a great one. So I want to say this before we dive into the episode. If Lynch with a Leader is something that you enjoy, man, you can help us so much by hitting pause right now. Just hit pause. You can go to iTunes and leave a rating and review or Spotify and subscribe. Man, that's the best way to subscribe and share and let others know that you're on here. Boy, it just means the world. Every person that gets the podcast, it's not about anything other than helping them be the leaders that God created them to be. Well, we've hesitated long enough. Today's going to be a fun one. So I hope you have something to write on. I hope that you have a way to hit pause. So if you're driving, you may want to go back and re-listen to it because today is one that you and I both need. So I want you to pull up a chair and I want you to listen in to my conversation with author, speaker, leader, Natalie Bourne. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Lynch with a Leader. It is an honor to meet you.
Well, I am so excited to be here, Mike. And let me just say, I've had the opportunity to listen to the podcast, and it is incredible. You really talk to some phenomenal leaders, and I personally have enjoyed following you and just listening in. So excited to be here today.
Well, you are really, really kind. And I saw my ratings double, which means you listened in to that. We took it from one to two. So that's great. That's great. So it's so fun to talk to somebody who I see the title of their book in. You have a fire that's burning. I've watched a lot of your interviews on other podcasts and listened to you. Has that always been in you and part of Natalie, that there's always been a burn inside of you to do something with your life? Take me back a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So I grew up in, you know, Duluth, Georgia in the 80s. There was not a ton of diversity here. And honestly, I always felt a little different, right? Because there wasn't a ton of diversity. This was before the Olympics, right? Before Gwinnett County in Georgia even became one of the most diverse counties and probably in our country. And so I always felt a little odd, a little particular. Mm. But what's interesting about that really drove me towards God. It drove me towards His Word. It drove me to ask questions, you know, God, who have you created me to be? And what do you want that to look like in my life? And that led me, honestly, into business, which was fascinating and really fun. And so I really have felt that sometimes the very thing that we feel makes us stand out is God's fingerprint on us, you know, maybe drawing us closer into him to say, yeah, come over here. I have more for you. You don't have to follow the same beat of everyone else's drum. You don't have to follow the same path. I have more for you, and I've carved out a place. And so oftentimes, you know, most people, especially kids, right, they see differences as not a good thing, right? Makes you stand out, makes you, people notice you. But God uses those differences to shape and mold us and actually create us into who he's called us to be. And as a believer, we are not called to be like everyone else. We are called to stand out. And I've just seen that across my life and across my story.
How did your parents play into that? Did they sense that in you when you were growing up, that you were feeling this, I'm not like everybody else?
You know, I think so, but I would say that, you know, that was probably the same for them. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom was from the New Orleans area. My dad was from Philadelphia. And, you know, when they got married, they moved to Philadelphia. And my dad just looked around and said, we cannot live in this environment. We cannot live in this neighborhood. I've got to go kind of pioneer out and find something different. So they ended up, you know, moving a couple times and then ended up in Georgia. But my dad personally was seeking a better life than the life that he had. And so it's fascinating. Oftentimes when we think about ourselves as leaders, as parents, a lot of what we do is try to help our kids avoid the very things that we went through.
That's right. That's right.
What's so fascinating about that sometimes is that those hard things are actually the things that shape your character, your purpose. All of those moments, right? Those dark nights of the soul are actually what shape us into who we're called to be. So I think for my parents, they really wanted to get us into a different setting, into a different neighborhood, into a safer neighborhood. I mean, those were a lot of the things that drove my parents to move here. But in doing that, we were some of the few minorities in our neighborhood. I don't even feel like I met very many minorities until I was in probably middle school. And that was just a very fascinating, you know, time to, and now if you look at our Gwinnett County, for example, it's one of the most diverse, but it wasn't always that way. And so in that way, it was just a fascinating time. And my mom, you know, for example, she was a business owner. So she was one of the first entrepreneurial women I ever saw growing up. She had a modeling agency in Norcross. And so I got to see her, you know, launch things, try things. Some things worked, some things didn't, and just see her kind of journey through that. And it was just a very fascinating time in my childhood as well.
What was the heritage for your family? Where do you trace your roots back to?
So this is so fascinating. I've always asked this question of myself too. And one of the things I did, we did an ancestry test. My grandmother was actually on my dad's side, was telling me about it. And she was telling me all about this test, and it kind of encouraged me to go get this test done. And what we found was that I had 17 different countries lit up in this test. And so it was fascinating. So for sure, you know, we have African in our background, several different countries, European in our background. My mother's Creole. So French was, you know, I think I'm like 14% French. On my dad's side, I had a high amount of, you know, British, Scottish, Irish. It was fascinating just to see kind of the melding of all the different worlds coming together in our background. So Polynesian, I mean, there was things in there, Native American, there was things that I just didn't even expect to see. And we're still scratching our head about how some of these things got in there, but it's actually a really fun journey to explore your past.
Well, you think about Psalm 139 when scripture says we were knit together in our mother's womb, and we're fearfully and wonderfully made. So let's jump out of the story real quick and go, that's not your story. That's not, you were like everybody else in Duluth, Georgia in the 1980s. What do you think's different about Natalie today if that hadn't have been your story growing up?
Yeah, I think that when you face any kind of trial in life, whatever it looks like for you, and especially as a child, again, a lot of us as parents, we want to shield our children from the hard things. I went through this. I don't want them to go through that. Sometimes it's the hard things that create grit and resilience inside of you. And I think so often about those seasons of, you know, just feeling you know, different, feeling way too unique.
Yeah.
And realizing that there was grit and passion and just even a closeness to God and a better understanding of who he was and what he wanted to do in my life in those seasons through journeying with him and feeling, you know, kind of different from everyone else. And so oftentimes I feel like that if we will allow it to, the fire, right, in our life creates resilience. It creates a refinement that we wouldn't have otherwise if we had grown up, you know, quote, with an easy life or with things being easier. And it's sometimes those hard things that shape us and form us into who we're called to be. And so I think a lot of what it did for me is, you know, I wasn't afraid to pioneer things. I wasn't afraid to try new things. I remember, you know, being younger and saying like, hey, I can't control what I look like, but I can control where I put my time, my emotions, and my energies and affections. And so those real for me went to two places. One, it went into learning. Like I just loved, I had a love for learning. And I knew that if I invested in learning, that that would create growth in my life. But then it also enabled me to really invest in knowing who God was and not just the God of my parents, right? But who is God to me? And so those two things created such refinement. And, you know, you look back on your life and you're like, yeah, at the time I wish, you know, life would have been different. I wish I would have had, you know, more people that might've reflected who I was. But sometimes you're called to pioneer a path that is going to create opportunity for other people. And in order to do that, you have to be able to stand alone and say that, hey, this is the direction I'm going, even if it doesn't make sense. And even if no one else is following me at the time.
That's fabulous, Natalie. And I think being able to look back in the rearview mirror of our lives and see that and how God didn't waste any of that time. He didn't waste any of those experiences. And you said something really unique, and I've heard you talk about this before. Your faith became your faith, not just mom and dad's faith.
Right.
It became your faith at 19. What was it at 19 that it all came together and you went, okay, this is now my faith that I'm going to live out?
Yeah. I think being launched out into college did that for me. I mean, there's something, you know, very fascinating. So most of my life, I probably from the age of 15, I have worked and then gone to school. So, you know, all throughout my life, I've worked and gone to school. And so here I was, you know, 19, going to college and also working almost a near full-time job. And I think that, again, those types of things kind of force you to have a reliance on God, that if you had somebody kind of handing you the opportunities and if you didn't have to work hard for it, you may not realize kind of where your favor is coming from. And so, I think one of the biggest things that I always laugh at is when people say they're a self-made person, because the only person that really makes us is God. And I think that he provides doors, he opens doors, gives us favor, and really kind of launches us out into what we're called to do. So for me at 19, I think I had this aha moment of, I can't just rely on my mom or dad's prayers. I have to begin to know who God is for myself. And I just remember during that time, you know, like fasting a whole lot and really learning kind of the joy of fasting, because you, again, it's not that you're convincing God to do something. You are capturing his heart when you fast. So all the noise, right, is gone. All the crutches that we use in life, all of those things go away. And we start to understand that, you know, if we're going to hear God, one, there has to be a hunger there for us to hear him. But then two, when we remove those crutches out of our life, we actually have the ability to engage fully and to engage in our faith in a new and fresh way. And so that was the season that I just really started to seek him more and to not only seek him, but the cool thing was really begin to find him and hear him in just a new and a different and unique way.
What would you say to somebody listening in today that goes, Natalie, I get it, but my faith is really more of a weekend thing. What I do Monday to Saturday, whether it's at a corporate office or at a school or a government facility, wherever they work, that doesn't have anything to do with my faith. How would you say your faith drives how you lead now as a business leader?
Yeah, I think that's such an important thing. And if faith is a weekend thing for you, I would encourage you that you're probably operating at a level three, and you could be at a level 10. And so there's something so impactful and powerful about really understanding God, especially in business settings. And so, so often when I look back on phenomenal business decisions I made, you know, I had good counselors around me, I had good people around me that I was able to bounce ideas off of. I was able to know that they had my best interest at heart. And when I made poor decisions, it was typically something I didn't pray about. It was something I went alone on. I didn't really ask anyone. And I just kind of jumped in right with 2 feet. And so often, I think as you journey with God and even later in your life, you realize that there's a protection and a covering that is on you and on your business when you choose to partner with God and ask him, is this a good partnership to go into? Is this a good lane to jump into? Is this a good invention to launch? And not just assume that because you have an idea, you know, not every idea that's a good idea is a God idea. And so really stepping back and looking at the lay of the land and asking yourself some hard questions, but really asking God some hard questions. You know, I love the book of Daniel. It is one of my favorite books. When you think about God endowing wisdom on someone, you know, he lived a life of just seeking God and going after God, no matter what the cost. And you see God just show up and bless him for that. And my favorite part of that scripture is where it says Daniel was 10 times. He had 10 times the wisdom and ability of anyone else. And I see that as being the case, you know, in my life, that when I'm connected to God and when I'm leaning into his promises, his purposes for my life, I feel like I have 10 times the wisdom to attack any challenge or problem that I face. But when I'm, you know, kind of leaning into my own wisdom and ability, I don't necessarily feel that I always have like 10 times the wisdom. So there's something there that's so impactful about the life of Daniel. And just as a business person, somebody that I personally enjoy studying how he lived his life, because he was definitely, you know, in a season where, you know, nobody agreed with his God. There was very few people, right, that shared the passion for who he followed. But God blessed him and just put him above his peers because of his faith and his faithfulness.
That's so good. That is spot on. And I think, and you nailed it earlier when you said, I think so many times we're a level three and we could be a level 10, right? God has more for us than we're accessing or we're taking or anything like that. And that's powerful. That is powerful. Your brand new book, Set It on Fire, The Art of Innovation. Innovation, go back in your story. Innovation has just been part of your business career, hasn't it? So walk us to what got you to this book.
Well, yeah, this was probably a very long journey to get to this book, as for most people it is. But, you know, when I started out at a company at 19 and I was in their call center answering, you know, customer service calls while also going to college full time. When I graduated, I moved into account management. And then a year later, I moved into training and development. And then a year later, I moved into project management. And in that project management role, just a few years out of college, an opportunity came up to outsource into Nevis, which is in the West Indies. And so I started to travel to Nevis to train this team on some items that we wanted to outsource. And I was so young that I had to bring a colleague with me because I could not rent a car. And so I just, you know, it was just fascinating to be like, hey, will you please?
Nothing makes you more of an expert than not being able to rent a car.
That's right. So, you know, just at a very early age thrown in. And so from that, I at the time had looked into this master's program that at the end of that program, I would actually get to study abroad. And I was so excited about that opportunity. So it was an international MBA. And so I saw this opening in international product development. I literally had no experience or background in technology or product development, but I had a background in international. And I knew that our organization liked to hire from within. So I marched myself down to the, you know, technology department, which was like in the basement of this building. And I said, hey, I have no clue if I'm a good fit for this job, which you should never, ever say that to anyone.
Yeah.
But I said, I have no clue if I'm a good fit. Here's some projects I've worked on. Here's some things I'm passionate about. I'm in this international MBA program. And to my shock and surprise, they called back and said, yeah, let's do this. And so my journey into international product development began. We were growing so rapidly at the time. We were launching into other countries. So we were either growing organically, so from the ground up, you know, hiring a sales leader and then hiring the sales team and coming in and training them, or we were actually purchasing companies, and then we were merging them into our organization. So acquiring them and then merging them into what we were doing. So, you know, again, here I am 26, 27, working on mergers and acquisitions and traveling, you know, to over, for that particular role, traveling to over 14 countries at the time. And I remember one time being on a Delta flight back home, and, you know, when you're, they didn't have Diamond at the time on Delta. I think the highest you could go was like Gold. And I remember the lady coming around and saying, you know, or maybe it was Diamond, I can't remember, but she came around and said, you know, she was thanking all the people for, you know, joining the flight and this, that, and the other. Thank you for your membership with us. And then she came back and was like, you're too young to have, you know, this membership on the thing. But at the time I was just traveling so frequently that, you know, I had, I don't know, hundreds of thousand miles under my belt for traveling. And so I just felt like that role set me up for the future and just understanding how to navigate whatever's put in front of you, right? Whatever problem you're trying to solve, whatever solution you're trying to bring forth, of just being dropped into a country, not knowing anybody, here, go solve this problem, go figure it out. And so that really built my background in product development. I went on later to patent some different technologies at different companies, but my whole background became, you know, kind of this product development background, launching ideas from the ground up, helping people to start, begin, launch ideas, and then actually go to market with those ideas.
If I had pulled you aside when you were 14 years old or 15 years old and said, Natalie, you're an innovator, is that how naturally you would have thought of yourself? And it may be the answer, maybe yes. Or when did you go, I can do this? Was it a person that called that out in you, saw it in you, said it to you? How did that transpire?
So 100% no. My younger self was an A, B, and sometimes C student. I was terrible in school. I mean, let's just be honest. I wasn't terrible, but I wasn't good. I mean, my daughter has made all A's and she's 14, and that was not my story. So I struggled through school, and I actually think that helped me because it forced me to create learning habits. It forced me to create some resilience that, you know, I may not have had otherwise, some mental toughness. But at 14, for sure, I wouldn't have said I'm an innovator. Now, if we journey back to, you know, around that age, I actually thought that I wanted to study biology. I loved the study of DNA. I loved the study of eye color, hair color, like how do people get this way? And so I actually got really deep into biology, and I remember taking AP biology, and the class that was with me had taken AP chemistry altogether. So the instructor kept referring back to AP chemistry, which I'm going to be honest, I didn't like chemistry. Yeah. So here I am in an AP bio class, and she's like, oh, remember last semester when we did the AP chem class? It's just like this. And I'm thinking, it's just like what? What is she talking about? And so I had no clue how to connect the dots. And so she just passed me as just a kindness of her heart, because I truly should have flunked out of that class. And it was in that moment that I said, hey, AP bio, biology may not be for me. I'm going to give business a shot. So that's literally how I began taking business courses.
That's fantastic.
It did not work out with biology. And I realized, like, hey, I may not be as skilled in this area as I think. That led me down the path into business. And what's, I think, beautiful about most people's journey is it's not linear.
Nope.
Most of us think that, hey, I'm going to start on this path and I'm just going to go straight to the position I want to go to. For me, it was trial and error. It was trying biology and realizing that wasn't going to be a thing. It was trying different departments within my organization. As I mentioned, going from customer care to account management, to training and development, to project management. And then ultimately at that season, landing in product development and saying, oh, this feels right. And so, you know, my admonition to anybody, and you know, even later in life, I decided to try sales, and I realized, like, man, I really love it. And so often I think we're afraid to move into different paths, to move into different lanes. And we're so beholden to not knowing what's over there, so we don't ever leap. And I think there's something beautiful about leaping and trying something and then saying, okay, that didn't work. What's next?
Yep.
Yep. And that's part of the journey. And so for me, it wasn't linear, and I would not have believed you if you ever said, hey, you're going to have a really fun career in innovation. I would have said, no, that's, you're talking to somebody else.
I mean, and listen, I understand. I'm talking to somebody with two patents. I'm talking to somebody that hosts a podcast where leadership meets innovation. I think this is your bent. Can anybody be an innovator? Can anyone, no matter their personality type, no matter their job, innovate within who they are and what they do?
I believe the answer to that is an emphatic yes. And so that is my premise and my platform, is that I do believe that we can have everyday innovators. And so when I created this book, a lot of what I wanted to do is I wanted to make it as practical as I could, to say, here's a framework to try. Yep. Here's a something to try. So one of the things in the framework is an empathy map. So if I understand who I serve, now I can innovate for them. Mm. If I understand who's, you know, in my wheelhouse, who do I provide services or products or other things to, then I can say, okay, I understand their pains. I understand their gains. I understand what keeps them up at night. Now let me go talk to them. Innovation is this. It's just the ability to see patterns, to surface them, and to monetize them. Mm. And so if you can begin to talk to different people and see patterns, if you can find out how to surface those patterns and make them more permissible for everyone to enjoy that solve, right? That problem solve that you have. And then if you can monetize that, to me, you're on your way to innovation. And so I try to take, you know, these big lofty words like innovation, right? Who do we think of when we think of innovation? We think of Apple, we think of Life Church, we think of, you know, Elon Musk, right? And Tesla or SpaceX. Like, we have all these big things in our mind, and then we just toss innovation aside and we say, well, that's for them. And so I can't do that. But one of my premises is that we serve a God who's very creative. Like, if you think about all that he created on this earth through just his words and through speaking, there's that creative force in God that allowed all of this around us that we see and enjoy to be created. Well, that same creative force lies in us because we're created in his image. So if it's in him, it's in us. And so for some of us, it's very clear and on the surface. For others of us, and it's true for me, it had to be mined out over time, it had to be refined over time. And so that is in us. It exists. It's there.
You said something in one of the chapters. You said innovation is the ability to spark something new. Mm-hmm. And man, that's such a bottom shelf. Everybody can do it. But it takes time, and it takes pulling away for you. And we're going to dive in and get some really key things out of your chapters. For you to be great at innovation, what kind of disciplines do you have to have in your life to carve out moments to spark new things? Mm.
This is so, you know, something I learned at an organization, and it has helped me forever. And I think it's been so effective. So the place where I learned innovation, right? The first company I really kind of worked for growing up and was there for 11 years, we had thinking days, which sounds odd. But, you know, sometimes we would have, call it a 4-hour box where people could not schedule meetings. People could not drop by and tell you I want to ask you a question. And what those thinking days did is they sparked space for us to dream, to think, and to grow. I think the reason a lot of us don't feel innovative, or a lot of the reason why we don't innovate, is because we don't carve out time to think, to dream, and to really just place some guardrails around our time. And so there's something so incredible about how different people think. So for some, if they go out and walk in nature, they'll come back with 2 or 3 really brilliant ideas. For other people, they might have like a prayer room or something like that in their home, and they might want to put on some music and just begin to journal. And out of that journaling time, ideas and innovations and things like that may spark. Whatever it is where you feel naturally gifted, naturally comfortable, naturally talented, from that place, we should try to innovate. For some other people, it's like going to a coffee shop, right? And there's all this hustle and bustle around them. It really just sparks excitement and energy. And so wherever we find ourselves, being able to put ourselves in a place where we can be most effective at thinking outside the box and most effective at innovating, at dreaming, that's where we need to go. And so most people book their calendars, you know, 8 to 5 wall-to-wall meetings, constantly on the run. And that's not a way to innovate. And then sometimes we're so exhausted when we come home, we throw on, you know, Netflix or a show or football, whatever. But we're actually just kind of still occupying the space in the background of our mind. And we're not actually creating space to think and to dream and to grow. And so, so much of what I would suggest for people who want to innovate, who want to begin to adopt and form these different ideas, is find different spaces, find the way that you dream, and carve out 30 minutes, carve out an hour once a week to go for that walk, to go for that drive, to really find new ways to allow your mind to have space and time to dream, right? Our pace can be so fast that we're just in survival mode and we're not actually creating space to grow beyond where we're at today.
If people don't get anything else, if they can get that, and listen, I'm the world's worst, right? One thing, just like probably like you are, I can know all that, but unless it goes in the calendar, it's not going to do me any good. That is really good, Natalie. Thank you for sharing that, because I think so many people that listen to this call, they lead a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think we can get in that mode of we lose our ability to innovate because we're too busy. We just don't have time for it anymore. That's really good. You talk in the book about a strong foundation being an accelerator to innovation.
Yeah.
Why is it so important to get the foundation right?
Yes. I mean, I really feel like this is something that organizations don't spend enough time on, which is really thinking about what is the construct of our foundation. So when I think about our foundation, I think about your vision, your mission, your values, and then your goals. And sometimes people have the vision, mission, and values, but then they don't really spend the time to slow down enough to really understand their goals. And so what the vision does is it looks out into the future and says, that's where we want to go. It's this thing that galvanizes people towards a true north. And so often in leadership, we forget, right? Because maybe we were part of creating that vision. We forget that we've got to go galvanize other people towards the vision. And the more that we don't talk about the vision, the less people, you know, the less intent they have for why they're doing what they're doing. And that's where a lot of disengagement comes in, is when we don't give people the vision, when we don't continue to talk to them about the true north. Here's why we're on this journey. Here's where we're going. Here's why this journey matters and why it's important. And then the mission, to me, it really defines what do you do today? And so that mission is clarifying. It creates clarity for all people. It really pushes people towards a common goal. It empowers the team to act. Empowerment is so important in our foundation, because if our foundation doesn't have empowerment, then everyone's looking at the leader waiting for them instead of acting. And so lastly, the values. And I think values are very underrated, right? In recent years, we've heard all the phrases, right? Oh, those are just values on their wall. And so a lot of times values are underrated. But again, these are things that we keep in front of people because they become the DNA of the organization, telling the organization how to act.
Yep.
If we really believe in our values, we hire and fire by our values. Mm-hmm. That becomes our foundation.
You know, and you don't normally associate that in innovation. You don't normally go, well, that's more systems. Mm-hmm. That why is it so foundational for innovation to truly happen within an organization that there's been some time put into the grounding? Why does that breed better innovation?
Yeah, I love this Craig Rochelle quote. It's one of my favorites. He says, weak systems make great people look bad. So weak systems make great people look bad. Strong systems make good people look great. And so one of the things that is hard with innovation is if everyone's having to create the wheel every single time, then it's almost impossible to innovate because you've created a little bit of chaos, right, in the land. So what we have to do is say, hey, should all of our project managers be operating the same way? For sure. So let's create a playbook for them so that if I onboard or offboard anyone, we don't lose knowledge and everyone knows how to act as whatever that role is. And so creating playbooks, creating systems, it actually enables us to unlock innovation faster within the organization, because anytime we do an event or anytime we run a process, anytime we create a product, we don't have to recreate the wheel every time. That actually creates a lot of expended energy that could be spent towards innovation. So if it takes you, let's call it 10 to 15 hours to start a new project, what if it could take you 3 because you had it documented, you knew what meetings to launch, you knew what people to engage? Well, now you have an additional, right, 10 to 12 hours that you could actually spend on other things, because the whole team is not sent into chaos recreating the wheel every time. And so often, instead of us trying to recreate the wheel every time, if we would slow down, that would actually enable us to speed up. And so that's a lot of the premise of putting the foundation in place, putting systems on top of it, because a lot of times we hear systems and that feels like the opposite of innovation. Well, systems actually enable us to do our job without having to think about it, so that we can think about the things that matter, like thinking ahead and thinking beyond what we do today and really planning and dreaming into the future.
You know, it's so funny because innovation sounds like a solo sport, but you spend a whole chapter talking about the power of collaboration, that we aren't meant to do it alone. Why is collaboration a better way to innovate than just going up on the Moses mountaintop and bringing down the Ten Commandments, right? Which is how he did it. God delivered them to him, of course. But why is collaboration so good? And why are companies so bad at it? What would you say?
Yeah, this is a fun topic. And I think that, you know, again, when we look at the models, right, we look at our Steve Jobs and our Bill Gates, like we just see the one guy out there in front doing all the innovation. But the question is this: do you want to create that one person in your organization that has all the ideas, or do you want to create a team of innovators, a team of people that are forward thinking, a team of people that can think outside the box, a team of people that can go launch and spark new things within the world? And I think that's an important question. And you have to be honest, right? Because some people are like, well, I don't want anyone else to innovate and get the credit. Well, then that tells us where you're at. But if you want to spark innovation in other people, the way you do that is through collaboration. It's the idea of taking an idea and helping other people to shape it, to form it, to think through it, to even use different tools to draw out of people the ideas they have. And so some of the most innovative people that I work with are some of the most quiet people.
Yep.
So a lot of the tools that I have, even in the book, is how do we draw innovation out of others? How do we create the right systems and processes to hear, invest, and grow other people's ideas? And how do we place a bet on someone's idea and say, no, I'm not going to steal your idea. I'm going to ask you to go run it and report back to me on how it's going. And so much of I think why people don't innovate is either fear. They're afraid to let people fail. They're afraid to allow people the kind of the reins to try, and they're not sure of the outcome. But some of the most beautiful organizations I've been in that innovate, they allow people to try things on a smaller scale, not do big, bold train wrecks, right? Because sometimes if you let someone go far enough, fast enough, with enough money, it can be a really big disaster. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about helping people fail safe, fail small, and fail cheap. And so much of our journey has to be, you know, trying things in small incubations before we just boldly fail, right? We don't take somebody that's untested and say, here's, you know, $1 million, good luck. We say, here's $1,000, go do these steps and come back to me and talk to me about what you're learning. Okay, great. Here's $3,000. Go try a couple other things. We don't just give them, you know, untapped money or time. We give them time boxes. We give them, you know, a box of money and time and say, go try, go do, go learn, come back, report. And then we're going to go from there. So I think a lot of times when we think about innovation, it's kind of a bad word because, you know, we do hear about these big things that failed or these big things that didn't come to pass. And I even have in the book some funny stories of different organizations who have launched things that just didn't work out. But it's always because we're not talking to our customer. We're not putting them at the center of the conversation, and we have too much money and too much time on our hand. And that can sometimes be a disaster, right? Instead of breeding the results we want. So collaboration allows us to put guardrails on people. It allows us to allow them to fail in a safe environment, to learn and grow, get feedback from others. And then guess what we do? And launch them back out there to learn again.
That's right. It is so, and I'm so glad you hit it in the chapter that not everybody's wired. Like you and I are probably a lot alike in, I can walk in any room, not even know what the idea is, and we'll have 15 ideas, 14 of them I just made up on the spot. That, I mean, that's just, but then there's other people that walk in and they'll never say a word in that room.
That's right.
And they have the best ideas. Mm-hmm. They have the best, and your template on how to get that out of them is every leader needs them. And you know, and I'm a disc trainer. And so that's that S personality. Yeah. S's and C's are just quiet. They're going to hold back, but there's an art to getting that out if you don't care who gets the credit. And that's yes. And that's where silos begin to happen. And you spend a whole little area in the book talking about silos. Why are silos so dangerous for a leader if they don't detect them?
Oof, yes. Silos are, to me, it's one of these things where bad things happen in silos. I mean, I've seen organizations be taken down over silos. I've seen, lack of integrity happen in silos. So when we break down silos, there's actually also accountability that comes with us breaking silos down. And so to me, one of the most important things we can do is ask ourselves within our own organization is, do we have more silos than not? Now, some silos are just going to be there naturally, but because people want to work in their own sandbox and they don't want to have to ask you, you know, can I build the sandcastle? But part of what we need to ask when we're building the sandcastle is, am I building it in the right location? Is it the right size? Does it fit the needs of the people that I'm building it for? And so silos break that down. Silos suck resources. When we have silos in place, they actually suck life and resources out of people. It's the idea that we actually might build the same thing two or three different times. I actually had a story in the book about when I went overseas to meet with, at this company I worked at, I went overseas and I was meeting with a leader in Singapore. And then I went and met with a leader in China. And then we were the kind of the American leaders. And there was three different leadership teams. And all three of us were trying to solve the same problem and no one was talking to each other. So we essentially would have built the same product three times because we weren't willing to break the silo down, go into each other's world and have a hard conversation about what we wanted to build. And the fact that each of us wanted that control. So we didn't want to talk to the other person because then we wouldn't get the control. Yes. When you break silos down, you lose control, but you gain economy of scale and you gain the ability to be able to deploy resources in a way that you couldn't do before. So there's kind of a couple premises that I talk about with silos. I say that they waste time, they waste talent, they waste money. They waste people's energy and effort when you're building the same thing two, three different times. They definitely destroy morale. When I find out you're building the same thing I'm building and we could have been working together, they make us feel like it's an us versus them. And they actually create confusion for the customer. I mean, how many times have you called a company and they say, oh, well, that's not my department. Let me transfer you. Nobody from the outside looking in cares whose department it is. They want the problem solved. And so when we create silos in companies, well, that's not me, that's them. That's let me forward you. Let me transfer you. And then you're transferred four or five times. Now you're completely confused. You're frustrated and you've said your problem now four times.
Yep.
And so often we do this to people, don't we? Where these silos, they don't just hurt internally. They also hurt the end user, the customer. And so breaking down silos means that we can get to meaning faster. We can collaborate and we can actually move as one. And when we move as one, there's something powerful. I think the reason why early in my career, we as an organization, as a company, were able to be successful is because we figured out how to move as one. We figured out that the power of the collective was better than the power of the individual. There's something amazing about being able to move as one.
It's really good. And that silo ties into culture. It ties into alignment, which you spend a lot of time in the book talking about. But I want to unpack this quote because I think this is so good. If you're holding ideas until they're perfect, you've probably missed your moment.
Yes.
What would you tell that you live in this innovation capital world? What would you tell somebody like me, a novice on the outside, about just go, just move? What would you tell them?
Yes. Well, I mean, the perfect example, I think, for both of us is our podcast, right?
Yeah,
if someone goes and watches our very first episode compared to our, 100th episode, right? It might be a little funny. It might be a little laughable, right? I mean, I can think about the fact that, I might have looked like I was, held up in a, in the corner of a basement, right? In my very first episode, whereas, then you realize, we should have a little bit nicer of aesthetic behind me, right? So when you look at the very first thing someone creates, it can be a little funny. As a matter of fact, my premise is this: compared to where you land, you should feel a little embarrassed about the very first thing you do. And that should be a good thing, because oftentimes people are so afraid to move that they don't move at all. They're so afraid that the thing that they're trying to launch or whatever it is they're trying to do is not going to be good enough. So then we get into analysis paralysis, right? We get into this perfectionism cycle where we just don't move and we just don't launch. And so I think one of the most beautiful things that for anyone that's doing anything is just to get out there and try it and to fail cheap, fail small, fail fast. Yep. But learn and grow through it, get feedback, and just keep moving forward. And so, so often, even in software, where I see software products fail is that people wait a year to release anything. No, do, 2, 3, 4, 5 sprints and then get something out there to a customer, test it, get feedback, let them tell you, hey, you built this against the wrong wall, it needs to move. Let them give you that feedback, because if we spend a year over here, we're going to find out that we were solving a problem that no one cared about.
That's
and
right.
So the beauty of what this does is moving and breaking out of perfection. It helps us to move forward. Even the simplicity of creating content. I tell people all the time, you can record as many videos as you want in 30 minutes. You can do it 30 times, but on that 30th time, when 30 minutes is up, you've got to look in those videos and post something.
Yep.
Because so often people, okay, I didn't like it, I'll try it another day. And then the content never gets posted. Start bad. I mean, if I go back and scroll to the beginning of my Instagram account, it was terrible. But we have to start somewhere. Just start. Yep. And that's the premise.
I know we started an event this past year at our church, and we said, we're going to put the wheels on the plane while it's flying. We're not going to, because it's one of those feelings, and we've done it long enough. I'm old now. And so I've done this long enough. You have one window. If you miss that window, it is gone.
Yeah.
And because you're a larger organization, and this is what everybody deals with us on this podcast and people that listen in on yours, they're afraid to screw this thing up. And really the ultimate screw up is waiting too long and not getting it out there. As you sit where you sit, Natalie, final question of the day, you sit where you sit. God has gifted you your book. It is so good, and it's easy. It's practical. And I say this in a good way. It's simple. It's something that average people like me can go, I can do this. I get this. I know where it's going. You and I both being Christ followers, we understand, we have a home in heaven waiting on us. We understand that one day we'll all stand before the Lord and we'll be there. And you and I are a little different because we have to give an account of how we use the gifts and abilities that God gave us and how we maximize this life. What do you hope the Lord looks at Natalie Bourne one day and says about how you lived out the life that he gave you to live?
Wow. Gosh, that's a deep question to end with. I hope to leave people better than when I found them. I mean, I think that I love the quote that says, you know, be kind to everybody because everyone's probably going through hard things, right? I want to just leave people better than I found them. Whether I spark an idea, whether I spark a dream inside of you, whether I spark something that you can improve on, something you can go after, I just want to leave people better than I found them. And I think if we can do that, if I can do that, I feel like I will have lived the mission. And of course, pointing people to the person that enables me to do all of this, which is Jesus. So those are just some things that I hope that the giftings, the callings, the things that God's put inside of me, you know, once you hit your 40s and beyond, it's time to give it away. So once you hit 40, it's no longer about you. It's about being able to take all that you know and learned and begin to pass it on to the next generation. So, you know, I love with the quote that says, you know, people who want to die empty, you know, I don't want to die with dreams and books and things inside of me, right? I want it to have given away all that God has invested in me, important to me. I want to just continue to give that away.
Good stuff from Natalie. So much great content. And so much of hers was just great energy. And, you know, she works with so many different organizations. She is on the forefront of developing and new and innovation. And it's just refreshing to meet people like Natalie. Thank you so much, Natalie, for sharing your faith journey, sharing your leadership journey, but also unpacking what you've learned so we can all be better. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Like I said before in the intro, if you do enjoy it, hit pause, leave a rating and review. If you could write a note, that's awesome. If not, just subscribe. That is the best way you can help us get new people onto this episode and so they can be better in the spaces and places that God's put them. Well, I don't know where you are today, but I pray that you'll love God with all you got. I pray you'll love people and those that you lead, and I pray that you will live sent. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Lynch with a Leader podcast with your host, Mike Lynch. If you enjoyed this episode, you can help more people hear it by subscribing and leaving a review wherever you may be listening. For full episode notes and more spiritual leadership resources, visit MikeLynch.com.